Hello. How is everybody? Good to hear. You having a great conference? Good. My name is Brian Agneta. Your schedules might say Arturo Toledo. Don't worry about it. We're on the same team. We just switched. I am a design lead, design PM lead on the Windows Phone design team, which is a 100-person organization that does all the end-to-end interaction, visuals, audio, motion, front-end development for Windows Phone. So, for all of you who have a Windows Phone, hold them up. Come on. You want to turn them on, too, so we can see them? Is that it? Are some of you being shy? Don't be shy. Come on. All right, good. Thank you. So for all of you who have a Windows Phone, the graphics, everything you see, all of the assets are designed by that team and placed into code by a team that directly reports to me. So I'm from the source. Thank you for coming here. Let me go back one. If you want to tweet at me, I'm SailorZoon. If you want the whole team, all that 100 people there, back in Redmond, WP Design Team. We do track it. We do answer your questions as much as we can. Sometimes we let them go and let the community answer. We also post some interesting things that are inspiring us, so go and check that out. So, we already did that. I want to talk to you about journeys today. This is what we mean by advanced application design. But before I get to there, I want to talk to you about the Windows Phone journey. Back in 2009-ish, 10-ish, we had a complete interaction model, and we looked around, and we saw all of our competitors, and we said, uh-oh, we need to do something a little different. And so we sat down, and we invested a ton in creating a visual design that inspired us and would inspire the world. We call that Metro. And hopefully you can tell from this slide that we did do something different. And the invitation to you is to do something different with us. Metro, or Metro style, is our design language, and it's inspired by signage, wayfinding, and typographic design. That's why it appears so flat. But what you get when you design and embrace Metro is the content that you guys are thinking about, that you want to bring to your users, becomes the star of the show on the phone. And so by embracing Metro style, your applications will be delightful to all the end users. And the metaphor we were thinking about when we were using signage and wayfinding as our inspiration, we were thinking about all the travelers who come from one country and go to a next, just like me, and end up in The Hague, not speaking the language, but able to find my way here and be able to find my way from the airport to here and not having a problem. And that's because of clean typography, beautiful icons, and no extraneous decoration that allows the information to get across to me wherever I may be, no matter how complicated or foreign it may be. And so we thought, what better metaphor to bring to a phone that is supposed to be a smartphone, but sometimes has a lot of depth and a lot of complication? We said, if we can bring that metaphor to our phone, then people will perceive our phone as simpler, easier, and more delightful. And in fact, if you check the blogs and if you see what all the critics are saying, they are saying that we are simpler, easier, and delightful. And we're doing something new and something that a lot of people like. To get there, that moment when we said, oh no, we got to do something different, we went through a ton of iteration. At the time, the design team was a little smaller than it is now. It was about 50 or 60 people. And for 3 months, we explored what Metro might look like to us. We were looking for our soul and our definition. And this is a small sample. This might have been a half a day's work by one designer to figure out what would Metro look like on Windows Phone. Now, if any of you create an application that looks anything like any one of those, you've nailed Metro. All of these are Metro. They're just not the Metro that we put in our platform. Now, you don't have to copy us. You don't have to be just like us. We kept a pretty neutral design platform in place so that you guys could design something and innovate on top of the language and bring some innovation into Metro style, into your applications. So Metro is our design language. We call it Metro because it's modern and clean. It's fast and in motion. It's about content and typography, and it's entirely authentic. And that last sentence is pretty important to the design team. We think every day about what's the best way to bring content to these phones. And we think, boy, this is a really small screen, and it's flat. And then we look at that and we say, can a 3D object like a button with a glass bevel on it or brushed aluminum really live in a 2D space that's that small? And what does that bevel, that glassy bubble that you're trying to use for a button or the brushed aluminum, what does that texture bring to this device? The answer to us was a little bit of distraction. It was too much. And so by being entirely authentic, we are saying put the things, put the content that will live naturally there and look beautiful on its own. We used to say that it was entirely digitally authentic. And we'd said that a number of times, and there were some bloggers, I think they were on Gizmodo, but don't quote me, who said every time I hear them say that they are entirely digitally authentic, it makes me want to barf rainbow pixels. It's funny, but we do take it personally, because every day we want to bring the content that Microsoft puts into Windows Phone directly to the user without distraction. And hopefully you guys will do the same thing. Really be digitally authentic. And this deck, my presentation today, will help you understand how you can be digitally authentic and even push the boundaries and innovate on top of this language. So it's Metro style makes us different, and we'll all be different together. Uh-oh. All right, we're moving. We're moving over here. So, before I get into the meat of the presentation, Xbox, Windows 8, Windows Phone, and a lot of other Microsoft products are going to be talking about Metro style. This is a big year for Microsoft. And as you guys bring your applications to these platforms, the one thing I want you to remember is that if you design for Windows Phone first and say, I want to bring this application to Windows 8, it is not a matter of just stretching your application out and fitting it on a larger screen. And it is not a matter of doing the same thing, stretching it even more out and bringing your application to Xbox. Metro is about embracing the space that you have available to you and allowing that content to be the star in that space. So with this much space on your TVs on an Xbox application, you might be able to bring a little bit more content in or a little bit more delight. And on our screen, we have to be pretty conservative because we're small. And on the Windows 8 tablets, you might be able to do something in between. You might even change the task flows. Because if you think about what a user wants to do on their TV versus what they want to do on their mobile device or what they want to do on their laptop, it's going to be a little different. So as you move your applications from one of these platforms to the next, take the time to think again. Take the time to plan again. And bring the right tasks and the right information to the users, and you'll have a great app that spans our increasingly wide digital platforms. Okay, here's the other thing that makes us different. When you build for Windows Phone, Windows 8, or Xbox, you get something that Microsoft finally achieved in the last couple of years. We bring all of our products and all of our brands into singular platforms, and they look like they belong together. They look like they're family. Finally, how long did it take us to do this? Office, Xbox, Bing, it doesn't matter what it is. When you open it up on Windows Phone, it feels natural and it feels like it's part of the family. That's what we mean by integration. The second point about integration, when we build a product or an application like Pictures, we talk about integrating into the user's life. So what we try to do, when you open up these applications, we think, what is the user trying to do, and what emotion do we want to bring out? And in photos, it's about sharing, showing off, and telling stories, perhaps. And you can tell just by the landing screen of our Photos application, you can tell right away that this is about something that you look at for a moment and you show your friends. Now, if we were Microsoft of 5, maybe 10 years ago, maybe 7, if we were to build a Photos app, it would have been a folder that said Pictures, and then a whole list of photo icons with some random name next to it. And that would have been Pictures, and we said, done. But we're doing something different. We are trying to integrate people's lifestyle onto our phones. So that's the second way we differentiate. And the third way, with all of you, when you bring your content to our phones, we want you to take the same approach. integrate and be part of our family of brands and products that are landing on Windows Phone. Integrate that way. And then integrate your users onto Windows Phone. And I guarantee you, your apps will get 4 or 5 stars. They'll be commented upon. They'll be loved. And they'll be followed over and over again. So, advanced application design. As we move through this, we're going to refresh the basics, do a little design-driven process review. Then I'm going to talk to you about ways that you can innovate on this on our language. A lot of people look at our design language and say, boy, it's just black with white text and a little bit of color, and that's it. Is that all I can do? The answer is, yes, that's what you can do, but you can do more. And then we'll do a little scenario of applying what I'm talking about. So first, the Metro principles. Pride and craftsmanship, fast and fluid, authentically digital, do more with less and win as one. Pride and craftsmanship. Just as an aside, when I'm back in Redmond, there are about 30 individuals who report to me. And it's their job, they're front-end web devs, essentially, or they work in the markup language. And what they do is they are the final people to move any asset or tune any motion in code. And if the designer looks at it and says, that's one pixel off, it is their responsibility to change it. So there was a designer one day said, this thing looks best if it lives in this XY coordinate. Anywhere else, I think it's wrong. We fix that. And if you think about it, we're 800 pixels tall. If something was specified to be at the 400th pixel down, and my guys or someone puts it at the 399th pixel, we fix it. One out of 800 vertical pixels will go and touch that. We care that much about it. We want you to care that much about it. And I'll talk to you about ways that you can make that easier, because 800 by 480, holy mackerel, what am I going to do? I'll show you how to make that easy. Fast and fluid. When you look at any single screen on the device, either in my presentation or on the device, it looks pretty static. And that's nice because the information is jumping out. At that moment, it's the star of the show. But when the user is getting there, you want to give them a little bit of feedback. When they touch it, the content should wiggle a little bit. And in that little wiggle, the content should feel alive. It should feel like there's a living person in there. And you need to spend the time to make sure that that content is responsive to the user touch so that the user generates a relationship with the device. Authentically digital, we've talked about, and do more with less, I've been hinting about. But what we mean by do more with less is you don't have to decorate with chrome and you don't have to put glass or brushed aluminum. Let the content shine. If you're looking at any one screen in your UI, and you should ask yourself for every element you put on your screen, does the user need this to succeed? And if the answer is no, remove it and give the content a little bit more space to shine. You'll find that your application gets even more beautiful and even more delightful. I was just at a presentation last week in Sunnyvale, and a vendor got up on stage and he showed iPhone, Android, and Windows Phone next to each other. And everything looked beautiful, and I said, ooh, ah, look how well each of them are designed. And then the next slide, he stripped out all of the Chrome from the iPhone and Android, and, well, we don't have Chrome, but stripped out what wasn't the content on our phone. And what remained was amazing. On the iPhone and Android, about 40% of the screen was dedicated to content. We were about 80 to 90% of the screen. So when every time a user ends up in a screen in your application, if it's designed well, they get 50% more. They get more of what they were looking for, rather than all that chrome and decoration and those arrows that say, press here. You don't need that. Finally, win as one. On Xbox, on Windows Phone, and on the Win8 platform, we've developed a whole bunch of controls, patterns, and guidelines. We've built entire systems. There are 800 and, made me scratch that, there are about 500 screens on Windows Phone, and I don't know how many screens are on Windows 8, but we've seen a lot of patterns. We've tested a lot of different hypotheses. As you go to build your apps, the first thing that you should do, is look for patterns in the platform that will help you solve the problems that you're doing. And by using the controls and those patterns, then you'll benefit from the research that we've done, but you'll also be saying, yep, these guys got it right. And in turn, the user will have used our platform, and then they'll come across your application, and because you're following similar patterns, they won't have any question about how to use your application. But if you say, I don't like this, I want to do my own thing, the second they come into your app, they're going to have to learn something new, and they'll have a question, and they'll stop, and they might panic for a moment and go, oh, this is too complicated. And then they leave your app, having confronted all of these questions, they'll have the same questions for our platform. So you win and we win when we're all doing the same things. We're all trying to do the same things. But that doesn't mean you can't innovate, and I'll talk to you about how. That's how we win as one. So let's go out and win as one. Okay, little contrast here. Our competitors, iPhone and Android, they're using an iconographic language. They take a real-world tool or object and use it as a metaphor. So if they want to put a button on the screen, they actually build a UI 3D button. And they may even put press me or put an arrow that says press me. And that's what they do. And I'm not saying what they're doing is wrong. They have beautiful devices. They have lots of passionate users. They've built great products that meet users' needs. But when you're developing for Windows Phone, you need to embrace a new style, an infographic style. And when you're an infographic type presentation, content is represented as it exists. So if you want to go into your music application, you can actually put a picture of the band you're listening to, rather than a tile or a button with a music note on it. That's how content can be what it is. And then as all the applications do this, what ends up happening is that overlay of content and what the users want by moving the tiles, we're better able at representing the user's style or personality than an iconographic language. So if you had a whole bunch of Windows Phone all scattered, or maybe laid out on the line on the stage, and there were Windows Phones, you'd look down and they'd all look a little bit different, because somebody might put the people tile in one place, or somebody might put music tiles all over the place, and they'll look different, and there'll be pictures and theme changes. Whereas if you do the same thing with our competitors, it's just a collection of tiles, and they are so small, it's like all buttons, they look like M&Ms scattered in an ordered way. Again, nothing bad with that, but what we get by being infographic is your brands get to shine, and the person's personality gets to come out on their phone, which is a pretty neat thing. So we're an infographic language, and hopefully the application that you design will be also infographic. Now, the system navigation, we're hub and spokes. Everything starts at start. You choose your application, you start drilling in. You go from a list view to a card view to settings. And then when you hit the back button, you come out. Each of those screens you just saw comes out. It's pretty straightforward. When you're building your app, you also want to trust the hardware. We gave you some shortcuts. Start will always get you out of the system. You don't have to put any other button in your UI to get a user out. Likewise, we have a back button. Every device must have a back button. You don't have to put a back button in your UI. We did it for you. Plug into those opportunities. Now, sometimes people put home buttons and back buttons and all these things. They try to duplicate what we've already done, and it creates confusion in the system. And you can get these infinite loops that occur. Now, the best thing to do is as you're laying out your UI and your information architectures, you want to not only follow the user task down from the top, the highest level screen, to the lowest level screen, but you also want to imagine what happens when the user hits back. You want to expressly state that in the IA diagrams that you produce. When you do that, your development will go a lot easier. Finally, be predictable. We already talked about this a lot, which is there's some system patterns and rules that have already been created. If you follow those, then when a user comes into your app, you'll be more predictable. Likewise, if you use the hardware controls, you'll be more predictable. If you use the iconic metaphors that we use, you'll be more predictable. And all of that will answer a lot of questions for the users before they even get into your app. And finally, there's opportunity. Yes, your application can land in the live tile list or the application list. But if you're building a music app or a photos app, your application may also land in our music hub if you're building a music app. Or if you're building a location based application, for instance, if someone were searching for pizza by using the search button, your application will also be shown in a list of applications that serve that need as well. So there are lots of ways to get exposure to your application. You need to just go and find them. All the APIs are exposed. We've documented them all over the place. And it's a great opportunity for you guys to get that extra surface area and get that person clicking to download. Okay. I mentioned earlier how we're an infographic typographic language. That means that the placement of the words and the placement of your content needs to be considered very, very carefully. It's not about how much you can put on the screen. It is about the right thing to put on the screen and emphasizing what we call reads. That's the first thing you want to look at is a read. And the second thing is your secondary read. You want to have one read, maybe two read, possibly a third read on each page, and that's it. That way it's nice and simple. And then you want to give each of those reads enough space so that the user can focus on them without any distraction. So what you're looking at here is an appointment. And the user got here by hitting the calendar icon. And now at the top they can see, oh, they're in the details list. And there's a title and there's a date and time. You can tell those two things because they're the next largest things and something has a color. And you can tell the third read is everything in that smaller text. Because if you think about the user in that situation, they're going, where do I got to be and who's bringing me here, right? Or where do I got to be and what is this thing? Those are the first two. Everything else, that's some stuff you can wait until you're stopping. For instance, if you're running to the meeting, you can stop and then read it. But there was a first read, a second read, and then a third read. Now, we also have a primary read, which is where can I find the other information? So we use that pivot control at the top to allow people to find the attendees. So you can see that we care a lot about the prioritization of content and keeping the content or keeping the user oriented. So make sure that the first and secondary things are somewhere near the top and they're larger and maybe they have a little color accent and everything else is a little lower and give everything that enough space. Those two things are really important. Now, there's a trick here. You want to make sure that you don't create any artificial artifacts in your UI that will drag the user's eye to a certain place on the screen. So what a lot of people do, and even I did when I first started learning this language, I said, all right, well, it's text on a screen. How do I show text priority? Well, I start indenting like an outline. What ends up happening, if you indent, maybe my laser will still work. Yes, it does. Okay. If I were to indent this piece of content off this line, say out here, that empty space, while nothing's in there, will create a visual artifact that my eye will go to for a moment. And the more I create those little indentations, maybe I create one here and one down here, my eye will, for a moment, check that out. It creates another object for the eye to focus on. And for a moment, whether you know it or not, whether the user can talk about it or not, there'll be a processing moment. And if you ask a user to process this UI that's drawn exactly like that, or the one with the indentations I talked about, they'll always point to this one as simpler. They may not be able to express why, but they'll always point to this one as simpler. So how do we do that? We throw a grid down. The Windows 8 guys are talking about their grid all the time. Super important. You can get our grid off of the MSDN website. And if you can't get it, tweet me and I'll send it to you. But we throw a grid down, and one of the primary artifacts of our grid is that everything sits on that 24-pixel margin. And with everything lined up there, the eye doesn't have to chase those invisible borders and boundaries. They just read the content. The other thing that you can do is use native apps as a guide. If you're trying to organize a list of music, we've already organized lists of music. Go and look at how we did it. If you're trying to do a list of contacts or a list of tweets or whatever it is, go and look at how we do these things. They're just patterns. Now, it doesn't mean you're copying us. You're just trying to figure out, okay, what's the best way to lay out this material? After having done that, then start to inject your own brand or your own product's personality. So if you guys were to look at Facebook or Twitter or Netflix, you can see that they followed our patterns, but they certainly look more like Facebook than they do Windows Phone and look more like Twitter than they do Windows Phone or more like Netflix than Windows Phone. Or Foursquare, who took it to the nth degree. They landed in our patterns, but it looks way different. It is their brand embracing our patterns. And so it's not cheating. It's not copying. It's just learning. And eventually you'll get all that and you'll just start designing with your brand and your product values right away. But this is a great way to start. Nope, still not working. Okay, so I mentioned the controls and the tools and building blocks. On the right is the design team blog, windowsteamblog.com/windowsphone/BWPDev, and use the phone as your template. If you were to go to the App Hub, you'll get all the controls and all the SDK and everything for Windows Phone. Design-driven process. Metro, the design language, Metro style, cannot be engineered. It is not something that you can write code for. Metro is a design philosophy or a design platform. It takes time. It takes every time our design team thinks about a new application we want to build or a new layout for content, it takes a long time for us to think about the right way to present that material. Whereas once that's all figured out, the engineer, it takes him a long time too, but the engineer begins his processes about the implementation. So design is a plan. It's how are things going to line up. And that plan can talk about innovation. It can talk about user opportunity or user goals or aspirations. And the engineering is an implementation. How do I get all those design goals to be met? So it's planning versus implementation. Metro, the design language, is a planning activity. It's what all designers do. That's what we mean by going from think to make. It's an emotional, intuitive, simultaneous / inspirational activity when you're talking about applying Metro. But when you're building it, it's more functional and rational and sequential. So we really make a contrast between those two activities. And it's pretty darn important to us. So you can, if you want, actually I'll go back. If I were at Microsoft maybe 5 or 10 years ago on the exact same team that I was on, we would have generated a list of every single feature we wanted to do. And within that list, some developer and some designer would start at the top and work all the way down. They would have started somewhere around here and worked down as far as they could until they ran out of time. And then it would be time to fix the bugs. And in that process, you're skipping the investment that it takes to design something. So when you do that, if you start over here and work your way down because you think you know all the features, what ends up happening is you get about this much work in bug fixing. And I actually review almost every premier partner's application. So when Netflix wanted to put their application on our platform, I looked at their design material, Facebook, Twitter, name something important. I've seen it before it was built. And there's a whole host of others that I can't even remember. But I can tell, the second I see an application, those teams that designed up front versus those teams that just began with the code and tried to fix all the bugs that appeared. It's way more valuable to give yourself the ability to define the problem. Who am I building for? What kind of emotion do I want them to have after opening my app? What kind of relationship do I want to establish with them? And what do I want them to say when they say, this is the best app ever because ... So if you put this in front, the value is that you get a better understanding of what you're building towards and you discover the opportunities for innovation. For instance, you might be building a golf app and you say, I'm just going to track all the scores. And you just write all out your features and roll down here. That'd be great. You build a golf app to track all the scores. But if you go through this explore activity and get a bunch of people brainstorming, what might end up happening is someone might say, what if I took my Windows phone and I attached it to the head of the golf club and I was able to track the swing metrics of that user? Well, I'd break my phone, certainly, right? Crazy idea. That's not going to work. But someone would then say, you could probably get the same information by attaching it to their arm. And suddenly the phone's not broken and you get the same data. And you hadn't planned on it, but that moment, that silly little idea transformed from a silly little idea to a huge differentiator. That's why it's important to do design exercises first. Then you produce a concept and you see if you can put it all together. You get a dev to look at it and say, is this possible? And he says, well, yes, here, here, and here, but not here. And you go, oh, that's okay. I can redo this in whatever tool you happen to be using. And then he comes back and says, now I can do it. How much better is that than the dev just starting to code and suddenly realizing, I can't do half of the things that we wanted to do? So planning your application on paper or in Visio or Expressions Blend is a lot better than investing in your code and realizing you can't do it halfway through. It's a super important point. So when you're in the define stage, you want to know your user, you want to make it personal, you want to bring relevant content, and you want to let them be in the present. So for millions of years, we've been trying to stand up. And we've been standing up slowly, slowly standing up. And suddenly we can stand up and we can talk to all our friends nice and tall and proud. And then our phones got smarter and almost smarter than us. And we're bending back down again. Oh, no. That's okay. You know, your goal is that you want users looking at the phone. That's okay. But what you also want them to do is stand back up and say, look at this app. It just let me be in the present. I think you want this app too. So bring them down into the phone, but you want them to get back up and look at their friends and interact with people. And when you do that, you've not only created a relationship with the user with the phone in their hand, but the users who are around him saying, I had better get that phone and that app. So that's the goal that you want to do, the goal you want to achieve. That is all that's to say is there are technical requirements and there are business requirements for building an application. But please do not forget the experiential requirements. Can you make it useful? Can you make it usable? And finally, the holy grail, make it desirable. Make it something that someone has a relationship with, something they can love. Now, this is real data. I think it's 2009 off of iPhone applications. I'm not sure if the pattern still holds. But at the time, the average application was used once, and 1% of downloaded apps were regularly used in the long run. Holy mackerel. That's pretty bad. There are some applications that get a reprieve. Sports applications, social networking applications. It's because that data is constantly refreshed. Your favorite football team keeps winning, and there's lots of people talking about it. Or your friends are sharing pictures on their social networks, and you want to keep seeing that. So people will naturally go back to those applications. But if it's a sports app and the season ends, is the user going to go into that app? They will if you provide them a reason to. So when you're building your sports app that tracks your favorite football team, perhaps you can also include a contest of the passionate fans who follow that football team. And now you can put quizzes or things like that into that application. Now the person loves the team and your app and the people who use the app. And now they're going to go back in. So here's the formula. You want your app to attract, delight, and retain. You want to have a strong initial value proposition that is beautiful to look at. This will be found in your live tile and your initial screens. Then, once the user is in the app, meet their expectations. But every once in a while, you want to have a nice little moment where your application suddenly does something that they didn't expect, but are thoroughly thankful that you put it in there. There's an application on this phone. I believe it's either Fandango or Flickster. It's Flickster. No, it's Fandango. Sorry. Fandango is help you find movies that are playing in your area. Pretty great. But one part of the application, when you go into it, says, hey, these movies are within walking distance, and they're about to start in 10 to 15 minutes. Holy mackerel, how great. Rather than searching all over the movie theaters, they're just saying, nope. These are the ones you care about if you're going to the movies now. How easy is that? Pretty nice. So one of the applications we talk about a lot is Cocktail Flow. It has a great attract proposition. And we've been talking about this app since we launched. And we've been saying how beautiful the app is. It's to the point, so beautiful and so thoughtful that I don't know if you can see where my laser pointer is, but I'm pointing at all the ingredients over here. When you get to that screen, each one of those ingredients comes in on its own, and they kind of slide in as if they were sliding over a bar. It's really, really beautiful the way they did that. Further, they're using color wonderfully, and that color doesn't align with the way the platform was built. It aligns with the social activity where people will share cocktails. It's really nice, and that's great Metro. And what's funny is The first time we started praising this application, the designers of this application were in the audience. And they came up to us and said, "You think we're Metro? We didn't even know." And the thing is, a lot of people at that time thought Metro was black or white with white text or black text and some accent color. No, Metro can be alive. It represents the content as it should be. And cocktails are a lively, colorful activity, so make your application lively and colorful. They did a great job. Now, Delight is about bringing that extra promise. So I don't know if you guys know, but in the United States, there are these canteen trucks. And these canteen trucks drive all over different neighborhoods, and they're found in different areas every day. And they serve you tacos or sandwiches or hot dogs or pizza or sushi or whatever it is. And they generate a huge, passionate following. And sometimes, you know, before an application like this came out, you just stumbled over them. But if you had a favorite, finding them was really, really hard. But someone develops the app, and not only now can I find it, but I can see what people are saying. I can make an informed choice to go to Minimus Maximus because he is serving that special that I love, and he's nearby. Or I can go and explore something new because my friends are tweeting how great that is. You see that moment where I can learn a little bit? That's great. It could have been just a list of my favorite canteen trucks, but they gave me something more, and it was delightful to me. It helped me be informed. Finally, retain. The best way to retain any customer in any app is making it personal. If you download the Amazon.com app, one of the first things you see as you move through the panorama is that you'll see that it's presenting content that is recommended for me. And then later on, I see some real live content, which is either a deal that's going to expire within 5 or 10 minutes, or it's a deal of the day. And every time I go back into the app, there's something new for me, so that's discovery, and there's stuff that's relevant to me. Now, Amazon could have just replicated their web page on the first screen and called it good, but there'd be no proposition that would have attracted me, no proposition that would have retained me as a dedicated user and follower of Amazon products. They did a great job at sealing that relationship with me as a user. All right, now we're going to take it to the next level. Now, I talked to you a little bit about these panoramas and things like that, but I want to make a difference for you. There's something called a pivot. This is a pivot. Here, I'm just going to point. This is a pivot. Pivots are efficient, focused, and habitual. And if you get to a screen with a pivot and you pan left or right, you just go to the next category. Pretty straightforward. Think of them like tabs if you want. In your inbox, you'll go from all to unread or flagged or important messages. You should be able to think about those categories in your mind before laying them down. Now, in contrast, think about panoramas. Panoramas, I'm going to walk, there's a sign here that says, "Don't walk in front of the screen." I'm walking in front of the screen. Panoramas is this whole canvas right here. And you can almost do anything you want within that canvas, as long as you embrace the three principles that we've written down there. They're expansive, they're explorative, and dynamic. And by being expansive, you want an element of pace. You don't want hyper content density. We're not giving you a huge canvas so that you can put every piece of content that's important to you. What you want users to do or feel is like they're snacking on information, and you're just serving it up just a little bit at a time, like in courses, appetizer, main course, dessert. Think of it like a magazine cover. The magazine cover doesn't tell you about every article within the magazine. It tells you about the highlight ones, tells you where to find them, and lets you get there. That's what a panorama does, and it's highly, highly visual. What you also might see about panoramas is that we have a pattern for them, and they usually talk about pages. So over here, or panels, over here you can see your first panel, and there's a little peak that suggests there's another panel. And so if you swipe, this will come into focus, and that'll be your second panel. And then if you swipe, and this will peak over here when you get to here. And then we did this nice long one, we call it a double wide panel. And in there, what we're doing is we're slowing the user down a little bit. We don't want them to go fast here. We want them to to absorb a little content and reconsider and review what's there, if you will. And you might do things like present something new that they've never seen before, like new albums or new music or pictures of potential new friends. So you want to slow them down so that they might click there to go see what else is there. So you can see there's an element of pacing, almost, if you will, fast, fast, slow, fast. That's a good panorama if you do that. You don't want to go fast, 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 or slow, 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 slow. You want to modulate. Now, having talked to you about that pattern, let's talk about breaking that pattern, but still being metro. This is an example of a personal finances panorama. Never been built. It's just a concept. And you can see there's no natural page or panel. If I slide this 1 pixel over or 5 pixels over, it's informative. It's something new, and I'll learn something from that. Every area on this is something I can touch. It could be my car expenses, my house expenses, my entertainment expenses, or the expenses today versus tomorrow. This is a pure infographic. You can do a Bing search or another type of search on infographics, and you'll see tons of beautiful examples of what infographic design looks like. You can bring that to a panorama and have something really delightful. Notice that it's not jam-packed. There are cues and things that will direct my attention to it. I don't overdo it. I just do enough. And then as I drill in, you can bring more information in. So you want to think hierarchically. That's a way that you can innovate on a panorama. Generate your own pattern, but still celebrate Metro. Over here, this is a concept that came out of a real customer meeting that I had maybe a year and a half ago. I could have the dates wrong. But I was in Stockholm, and I was meeting with Absolute. And they said, I'd love to know if we can build an app where a user can pick their favorite color or pick the noise level in a bar or perhaps talk about crowd type, and we would recommend a certain type of drink. Or maybe shake their phone, and we'd give them something random. Well, that's really nice. It's a good idea. But you can see, just like the examples I was talking about before, it has a limited utility. It's fun once or twice, but eventually I'm going to go back to drinking beer. and I might not use the application because I know what kind of beer I want. But if the application delivers a user story, a user journey that's a little bit longer than just selecting a drink, then suddenly you might get a better relationship with me. So I called the studio from Stockholm, and I said, I need a panorama that generates a better user journey around meeting friends and finding a place to go, then finding the right drink, having some kind of point relationship, and perhaps documenting all that or taking pictures of that and saving that as a memory of my night together. And I said to them explicitly, please do not be obvious with your design. I want you to hint and be more infographic. So when you place that map down, take it off. Give me something else. And so what I'm talking about here is the concept that there might be 5 bars and 15 friends within 500 yards from me. That could have been placed on a map, but this is just as informative. And as these concentric circles come out, I know that I'm going from 500 meters to 1,000 meters and so on. And I can just make a decision based on how far I want to travel and where my friends are. If I click on that space, then I'll go into a place where I'll find a more ordered presentation. But this is really, really playful. And you'll see later on how we amplify that playfulness in the visual design with animations. And then I continue to tell the story by talking about the point system. Perhaps if I go into enough Metro-sponsored venues, I can get a point. So for every time I show up in a bar with a deal, I get a point or two. And maybe I take some pictures of my friends enjoying drinks at that venue. I can generate my own user story. But that's how, by assembling all that in a first page, I suddenly am telling a great user journey. I have a tool in my pocket. For every time I go out and have drinks with my friends, I can capture and save all those memories and discover something new. And it's pretty neat. If you think about your applications this way, you'll generate great user stories too, and you'll find that your applications are rated higher, talked about more, and used as examples in decks like this. So, live tiles on start. This is the first, maybe first or second interaction that users will have with your application. Certainly, they'll find it in Marketplace, but once it's on the device, this is where they're going to see it every day. So investment is really, really needed in making sure that you curate your brand delightfully on start. And here's a whole bunch of patterns that exist today. I'm not going to say anything's wrong or bad. I think everything is great because it's very clear. Over here, you have a simple pattern about having an icon on the background of a theme and some title. Maybe if your content is a little bit more rich, like music, you might bring in a band image or an album cover. You might be a little bit more playful, include some notifications, or you might just bring in some art, or you can be really simple. All of those are open to you. You can do any one of those. And if you read up on the design guidelines on MSDN, they'll tell you how to do all of that. They'll tell you exactly what we do. What they won't tell you, because guidelines never do this, but what they won't tell you is how you can innovate on that pattern. There's a possibility that we're just telling you how to achieve what we've done, and we're not thinking for you. We're not telling you how to innovate on that. That's certainly true. You could do something like this. So here's the pattern I just talked about, icon on the background. And so you'd have some artist produce this icon for you, and you'd include it on your tile. Done. Or you say, you know what? Let's turn the whole situation upside down. I'm going to deliver an asset with this piece cut out. And the theme will shine through that. Now you have a playful expression of your brand that always fits in. It's pretty neat. We do not say, don't do this. We do not say, do this. Right? Guidelines can't do that. We can't tell you everything you might think of. But we want you to think about pushing those things, pushing those guidelines, and pushing that sense of spirit of innovation out and produce concepts like this. It's pretty neat. Now, this develops a little bit because we have the concept of live tiles and deep linking tiles. And within with a deep linking tile, what you can do is say, there's a part of my application that users may want to go to a lot. So I'm going to allow them to bring that all the way to the start screen so they can go and hit one tile. They can hit this tile. Bless you. They can go to this tile and go right to the landing page of your application. But perhaps they like the Grape Houdini for whatever reason, and that's found deeper in the application. They can go into the application, find that experience, tap and hold, and say pin to start. Now you can pin multiple parts of your application to your start screen. I can show you this after the talk if you want. But anyways, you can see how suddenly there are multiple ways to get into your application, and it continues to play with that playful metaphor about cutting out parts of the asset to let the theme shine through the tile. Again, we don't say not to do that. We don't even mention it. But it's an opportunity for you. And you guys might be able to think about three or four more ways to follow Metro principles and deliver something that we haven't seen or thought of before. Okay, animations. The thing that really, really makes people sort of smile when they use a Windows phone for the first time is seeing the way the system responds to touch. So I'm going to talk to you about some of the basic animations that are available to you. Turnstile. Turnstile is used when you go from one space to another. For instance, going from start by tapping on the email icon and into that list. And you can see it moves through a door, sort of a door motion. So it's to jump between large spaces. Pretty straightforward. That code is available, I believe, in the toolkit. So you can replicate that. Now, continuum is to drill down and continue to give the user the sense of context to what they have tapped on. So I don't know if you can see it pretty well, but I'll point it out. The user taps on Dynera Read down at the bottom. And the name Dynera Read flies off the side and lands back on the top. And we're using animation there to connect two experiences, one at a high level, one at a lower level, so the user doesn't get disoriented. On the device, it's actually really unique. We can't get the right timing on this deck. But on the device, when you see that experience, it's really, really nice. It's beautiful. And you can see we're highlighting and using the animation to reinforce the content and reinforce the user's action. swivel. You want to use this for just dialogues. They appear, and when the user taps them, does whatever they have to do, they go away. Real simple. And finally, slide. It's used primarily when a user has reached the base of your application. It's the last thing that they can possibly do. It's usually found in settings. They tap on it, they make a change, it goes away. Now, again, what we're doing with our animations is highlighting the content and reinforcing the user behavior. We are not animating to show off that we can animate. Do what you got to do and then turn off the animations, because the star of your show is the content, not the animation. The animation supports your value proposition. So we're not Christmas trees that blink, 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 blink. We're more tutors. We help. We help users understand. We coach them and help them remember where they've been and where they've gone. Now, you can use those animations, or you can build your own. You want to have the same sense and the same principles. You want to hint towards interaction. Create a sense of physical space, layering on top of the timing and the pragmatics of our own animations, reinforcing your brand or user journey, and finally, turn those animations off so the content can be the star of the show. So use your animation to say, this content is important, but then turn it off so they can look at it. And so the animations that I'm showing, I'll show it to you. Come on, do it. Not there. Not there. Not even there. Here. This animation isn't something that we can give you. You would have to do that because it's appropriate to your content. And we would never say don't because you're innovating. So please do that or do something like that. Okay, applying it. We're going to build a little app together from the design perspective. I'm not going to talk about code. I'm just going to talk to you about the thought processes that designers go through. So we're going to talk to you about developing a user journey, talk about page structure and visuals, talk to you a little bit about differentiation, and then committing and realizing. So the first thing you should all do in building your apps is establish your goals and principles. This is purely a marker and paper exercise, or a pencil and paper exercise, or a whiteboard exercise. We're going to build a golf app together, so I've thought about it beforehand, and I've agreed with a whole bunch of people, maybe it was with you guys, that our golf app should focus on a shared experience, should allow the social aspects of golf to flourish, it should capture and save relative stats and details, and entering data should be easy to do while distracted. We could say also, you know, we could bring in that idea that I talked about, help me become a better golfer, you know, by analyzing my swing. That could have been a goal, but we didn't put it in there, so that's okay. So having written that, then you go to the next stage. You think big. Allow your designers, your developers, yourself and your family and friends to think about crazy ideas. This is actually a picture of the design studio, and the disclaimer is we don't really design like this. this is a canned picture. But the idea is you want a lot of ideas to come out. It's when you play in the explore phase where your innovations and your patents start to show up. And that's where people start to say that your app for golf is better than the other guy's app for golf. So take some time to do that. You know your own schedule, so you'll know when to turn that activity off and move it into the concept phase. And the concept phase begins first with saying, all right, I've got my crazy ideas. Where am I going to place them? So you have to look at the neighborhood. The neighborhood is the phone. So you know that you're going to have a live tile and a tile that appears in the app list. And there's a collection of ways where you generate your first experience. It could be a panorama or a pivot. And then you have deeper experiences. You follow those patterns, and you say, all right, I get what the neighborhood is doing. I'll give you one more example, a metaphor to think about. I grew up just outside Boston, Massachusetts. And in Boston, Massachusetts, there's a couple neighborhoods. One of them is Back Bay, where there are city ordinances, city laws that say your house must be brick and have white trim and a green door. And it's pretty important to everybody who lives there to follow that pattern, because that's the way the houses looked like when Boston first started to be settled. They wanted to retain that sense of neighborhood and that sense of community. They go so far as to say, and every outdoor light must be a gas-powered lamp. It's pretty crazy. But when you walk through that neighborhood, it gives you such a strong sense of history. But what it doesn't say is, and don't be modern. As long as your house is brick, white trim, green door, and a gas-powered lamp, you can do anything you want. Right? So we don't talk to you about what you can't do. We just say, just follow these four basic things. So somewhere in here is your four basic things, your patterns. You can do more within those patterns. So you understand the neighborhood, you understand your principles, you were thinking big, and your big ideas may generate a lot of UI, a lot. And either due to time or feasibility, you're going to say, you know what, I can't build it all at once. I'm going to build just a piece, and it's going to be in here. And the great thing about that is you'll have constrained yourself a little bit. You'll make something reasonable and achievable within the time, but suddenly you have a plan. If it takes you 3 months to build this, then it might take you 3 more weeks to build this, 2 more weeks to build that, and so on. And a regular set of updates is another way to create a great relationship with users. I don't know if you guys have the latest Facebook application. We've had some tough times with it. It was lack of performance, lack of features initially, and just last Monday or so, we released a new update, or a new update was released, and suddenly the reviews are going through the roof. We were listening to everybody, and we were regularly providing an update that answered their questions and their concerns, and also added a little moment of delight. So you can avoid the mistake that we made by trying to design too much early on by being conservative in your initial approach and then regularly adding your value proposition. And that's a great way to establish a relationship, a solid relationship with end users. So you're going to take that hierarchical diagram and you'll eventually create a map. For an application that may take you, say, 3 months to build, what's a good example? So let's call it not Facebook, but Netflix. If you were to lay out every screen in Netflix on one piece of paper, it would probably be 4 feet wide by 4 feet down. Crazy. Do it. It is so helpful to see your UI laid out that way. And developers in the room will look at it and go, all right, that's my plan. And the developers in the room may suddenly say, all right, the best way to code this might not be top-down. It might be bottom-up, or it might be starting with the central value proposition or the central core components and then build out from there. When they get that map, they can see better at the way to approach the code. So this map not only helps the designer visualize all the paths that user may go through, but it helps the developer understand what tasks he has to do and what order he has to do them in. Consequently, his code is better. He has less bugs. He knows what you want to achieve, so there's less bugs there. And so the time you spend fixing all of your bugs even gets reduced. Now, this is a sample. This was a big application we built, and this poster was actually 7 feet or 8 feet wide by 4 feet tall. And it's not even complete. We would go so far as to say, what animation occurs when I go from this screen to this screen or back and forth? For all those green lines that you see on the screen, we would say, what animation do I want to happen? We'll even go so far as to track from here, what happens if I hit the back button? What happens if I hit the back button? What happens if I hit the back button? All of those things, if you plan them out and document them, it's a better contract that you would have with your developer, and again, your application becomes better. But if you just say, developer, 15 features, here's a sample piece of UI, go, have fun, let me know when you're done, and put it in the marketplace, it'll never be done. It'll always be broken. So creating this plan is super, super helpful. We do it for every app. We do it for the UI on the phone. And as I said, there are about 500 screens on this phone, and we've built tools to enable us to do this. We practice what we preach as well, and we find that creates better, higher functioning UI. Now, along the same time, you have to create your visuals. So I have the benefit of having interaction designers, visual designers, motion designers, audio designers. Some of you are having to do it all at once. If you are, I'll give you a big hug after the presentation. It's a lot of work. But this is a great way to go. Look, it's pen and paper. It's not that hard. You don't really need a tool. In fact, this is the best tool, pen and paper. And as you're doing this, you'll have the opportunity to say at this moment, is it feasible? Your dev can look at this and say, no, I can't do that. Or your dev can say, holy mackerel, I had no idea. That's awesome, right? And as a visual designer, a creative director, he may look at some of the patterns and say, yep, it looks like you recognize that there's only one left-hand margin. Good. And so you're getting even pre-approval from your creative directors. You can see that the design principles are being followed, even in an early sketch like this. Later on tonight at the 8 o'clock, what is it, Geek Fest or something like this, I'm going to be talking about paper prototyping really loosely. But one of my guys who builds applications, he will build out his UI on a whiteboard and just mark it up, mark it up, mark it up. And then he takes his phone and takes pictures of every piece of UI. And then he takes that picture and puts it into Blend and puts buttons and all the controls right over it and then removes that picture. It's a pretty neat way to build paper prototyping. Really straightforward. And it's super fast. But if you rush to code, you'll never be able to pre-approve of your design. So then it starts to come to life. You get to see this and go, ah, is my brand, is my value prop showing up in this the correct way? And you can say, no, or yes, it is. And you say, yes, we're going about this the right way. And the next thing you might ask is, show me the animations. Do the animations also highlight the user task in my value proposition? And you can start to approve of all of this before the dev starts coding. Now, oftentimes when I'm telling people how to build applications for the first time, what I'll say is, build your application first, and then build what you think your panorama should do. Because the panorama, again, is going to introduce some perhaps outside content or new content that you want to be related to your application. So you want to get the foundation of your application done and then add that magazine cover on top. Now, so that's what I'm talking about here. This might be a great way to illustrate the first experience on your application that's talking about tracking golf scores and talking about sharing and talking about the ability to purchase new content. And so you might land here, and you can see a basic menu, start a new round, check over my statistics, perhaps find a course, get some instructions, settings. Pretty easy, right? And then I pace it. Look, nice and slow through here. I got some statistics, and I'm going to want to stop and review those a little bit. So when I pan in here, I'm slowing down. I'm creating that pace. If I wanted to just show off with my friends here in the front row, I might say, hey, you got to see what I did at the Newcastle course. I can't pronounce that, so Newcastle course. And so you tap that, and I can see I got a 77, which is probably about 200 points lower than any other golf game that I've ever played. I'm a horrible golfer. So I could show you how I did a Newcastle, and see how quick and easy it would be for me to do that. Over here, instruction videos, and perhaps new ways I could buy equipment. This, by the way, wasn't in my initial value proposition. So your dev might say, wait a minute, or your brand manager or your business manager might say, hold on a second, what's that? And you might say, that's opportunity. And he goes, yeah, that's a good opportunity, let's do it. Or he might say, save it for the next release. Not a bad idea, right? So okay, save it for the next release. Stop building here, and the next week, start building here. Really easy to make to update the panorama rather than scrapping it all up. After you build a whole bunch of apps, you can start baking in panoramas into your natural collection of toolkits that you just put into your application. You don't have to do it separately. But it's nice to do it separately, build your app, and then consider what a panorama is. Because it's kind of a new, wacky control. It's way, 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 way open space. And sometimes it's hard to play in those open spaces without a little bit of practice. But you can produce things like that. And then, now you're ready to code. Holy mackerel. I spent whatever it is. If this was an hour and 15 minutes, an hour and 5 minutes talking about the design process. And I'm only going to give you 2 slides on the development process. Why is that? Because I've seen a whole bunch of applications built from the day we released to now. And too many people have tried to do those activities simultaneously or skip design entirely. And there's a great... I can't remember who said it, but there was someone who asked the question, well, do I have to design? You know, what if I just forget about this design process? The thing is there isn't design or no design. If you say no design, you actually get design. It turns out it's just a really bad design. So what you want to do is emphasize and prioritize that planning, that design activity that will really generate an application that you're proud of. That's something you say, yes, there is pride and craftsmanship in this application. And users will notice. There's a whole bunch of applications that were just updated very recently through vendors that I've contracted with and other vendors who have come back in and cleaned everything up and really made the applications look like they were curated. And their ratings jumped 1 to 2 stars for everyone who took the time to put the good design back into their application. Your application will be even better if you start with good design and then move to the development. So you get all that design material together, and you're going to validate against those principles that we started against. You'll be able to say, is it social? Can I share? Is it easy to integrate? Where's the innovation? You'll be able to ask all those questions, and you'll be able to say, we didn't meet any of them. You'll be able to look at a designer or somebody who's building the app and say, apparently we misunderstood each other. Or, yes, you nailed it, and someone's going to buy this application. You can feel really good about where you're going. Then you're going to write your code. Please, 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 as you're writing your code, move your code to the device a lot. In Expressions Blend, it's one button click. It's I think it's port to device or import or export to device. You can also export to the emulator, but move it to the device a lot. Oftentimes what I've seen happen is people design on the emulator and they validate all their touch points with a mouse cursor. And they get it to the device, and the only thing that you can touch on the device, so the only way you could touch all those targets is with a mouse cursor. So you need to make sure that the things that you've built are big enough for a finger to hit. Also, there's a lot of moments of delight, like themes. We have a dark theme and a light theme, and we have a whole bunch of accent colors. You want to test your application in dark or light theme. There's a lot of people who forget to do that, and when they would switch their application to dark theme, the text didn't switch for whatever reason, and suddenly they have an all-black page. Not fun. And by the way, if you ship your application in that state, and you say, I'll just update it, users will uninstall your application, and they will write reviews that are scathing. And that appears on the device as well. So take that pride and craftsmanship and find those opportunities. If you design first, I promise you that bug fixing will be easier, all your final polishes will be easier and take less time. So you can invest in design up front or invest in bug fixing later and you'll never fix all your bugs. So my call to action to you is invest in design up front. Internalize the process, apply it to new features, and build lots of apps. Thank you very much. I have just about 7 minutes for questions. Don't be shy. Oh, there's one.
You talked about pinning.
Yes.
Inside the application.
Yep. Start screen.
How do you make the application usable when you start into it halfway?
Right. So the question is, if I deep link part of my application to the start screen, how is the rest of the application going to be useful? Essentially? Yep. So there are two use cases. There's a use case where it doesn't matter. So for instance, I might have a stock tracker. If you guys download the MSN Money and Stock application, you'll see that you can press and hold on a stock, for instance Microsoft, and move that to the home screen, start screen. And from there, you can look at all the things related to Microsoft, but you can't get back to the home page. And for stocks, that's okay. Right? Sometimes, yes, I want to know what Microsoft did, and I also want to know what all the related things are. Sometimes you do. But oftentimes, that's good enough. Now, there are cases where, for instance, you might be building a point-of-purchase application, where you might want to always purchase new watches. And if you're Amazon.com, you would say, all right, well, pin the watch section to your start screen. So you do that, and then they would want to recommend something. Hey, you might want to buy socks. But if you can't get to the other parts of the application to buy socks or shirts that match, then what good is that pinning? So what you have to do, or what you have to consider is the ability to forward navigate from that space. So I perhaps tap and I pressed on my deep linked watch portion of the application. I've bought my watch. Now I might want to buy something else. You might consider a home button that would take you to the top level of the application, or you might consider a start again button, something like that. Some kind of concept that says, I can take you forward in your journey from here. So what I'm trying to avoid is saying, don't use the back button to go back to a place where you haven't been. That's sort of the poison pill that a lot of people do. So you want to generate a forward navigating element that takes you from that place that you deep linked into to another place in the application. And that's how you would do that. But you have to consider whether or not it's valuable to the user or whether or not you're just adding a feature because you know how to add the feature. That make sense? And I can show you some examples on my phone if you want. Sure. Okay. Any other questions? Here's one. There will be a plan that will be made available to you guys that will make sure that your applications run with minimal work for you. It might be a little work, not too much, but there will be a plan. I don't want to go into specifics because it starts talking about timelines and implementations, and typically guys like me don't talk about our timelines and release dates without the VP doing it first. But there will be a plan. We'll make that as easy for you as possible. And we're serious about that.
Yeah, Panorama, does that contain the complete your complete application, or are there any hidden screens or besides the settings?
Sure. The question is, does the Panorama encompass the entire application, or are there things elsewhere in the application that you can't see on the Panorama? Well, the Panorama doesn't contain everything, but you have to be able to start that task from there. So oftentimes, you might just put a link to settings or a button that says, here's how you go to settings. And there's a whole world of settings underneath there, but you didn't have to have every element of settings on the Panorama to get there. So you want to think of that as a hub and spokes model as well. And only one or two things should be surfaced to your Panorama. If you surface everything, it'll be too hard for the user to understand. OK? Uh-huh.
Make content really accessible. What is the metro take on this idea?
Right.
You have a lot of content, but you want to still make it navigatable.
Right. The question is, there's this informal guideline that started to appear on websites and even mobile devices about making sure your content is always available within two or three clicks. It's a good practice, but much like if you're ever in traffic, do you want to sit in traffic or drive a little bit longer so you can go 55 or 100 kilometers per hour? Sometimes having more clicks, but making each click informative and making giving the user reward along the way is actually better than making things being two or three tasks away. But it is it's a practice, it's a principle, it's an exploration that the designer has to go through. So yes, I would say, if you can get your user there in two or three clicks and your design is still delightful, do it. But if you realize that in doing so, perhaps your content is too dense or each screen is too complicated, then loosen things up and have a little bit more depth in your UI, and you'll find that users will perceive your application as a lot easier to use. So unfortunately, I can't give you a very clear answer except to play. Anybody else? You can ask me questions on either of those two things. A whole team tracks this, and that's just me. I'm not the best Twitter follower, but if I see it and I happen to be on Twitter, I'll do that. I left some cards there and there, and I also have a QR code that you can scan if you want my information on your phone. Thank you so much for your time. I really enjoyed the conversation, and have a great conference.